back. This is Jose Saavedra. I'm very excited to have Kristen and Cody Wasiuska here, the co-founders of Lumakers Wildlife Management. Before we get started, I want to welcome Cody and Kristen, and thank you for taking the time to do this interview today.
Thank you for having us.
So why don't we go ahead and get started, and we'll start with Cody. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your background, your professional experience, leading up to you guys founding Lumakers Wildlife Management?
Yes, I have a bachelor's degree in wildlife management, and then from college I went on to work with USDA for a couple years, and then Kristen and I founded the company.
Sure, Kristen?
Sure. Basically, I had a bachelor's in environmental studies as well. I also, out of college, worked for USDA for a short while. Left there to go back and pursue a master's degree in biology, which I achieved, and conducted research in airfield wildlife management while doing so. And like Cody said, we decided to start the company based on a need and went from there.
Sure. It sounds like your initial exposure to the industry and before founding your company, both of you guys came from that background of USDA. How was that experience for you guys, Kristen?
Well, you know, there's good and bad in everything. And, you know, there were things I liked. I definitely got to meet a lot of neat people in the aviation industry as well and get some field experience and see what airfield wildlife management was all about. It definitely sparked my interest to pursue the area further, and it encouraged me to go on with my education to see what other methods and techniques and things could be used to help the industry. And it really sort of sparked my whole interest in the field and gave me a little bit of field experience to go on and do that.
Sure. It sounds like that was pretty much the foundation or the starting point for your own wildlife management company. So as far as that's concerned, what were some of the observations that you guys saw in the industry of unmet needs that needed to, that led to the foundation of your company?
I think some of the needs that were out there is just other options. The airports were looking for alternatives, responsiveness, and innovations, and wanted to be able to see what other options are out there, and I think that's where we kind of found our place and went from there.
Sure, I think Cody kind of hit that nail on the head, and you know, there's always been a need. You know, bird strikes have happened, you know, ever since the beginning of flight, and we saw how many airports were basically, I was told they were just pigeonholed into using only one service provided by USDA. And, you know, that's kind of unfortunate because there should always be options. And sometimes USDA may be the best option, but oftentimes they may not be. And same with the private sector. So based on that need and, you know, our drive to basically be able to provide a service and be able to innovate and maybe provide more of a personalized service to the clients, sort of, there was definitely a need for more players in the game to overall provide a better quality of service and options to airfields across the country.
Yeah, and I think this kind of ties a little bit with the idea of disruptive innovation. When your one company comes in or another organization comes in and improves on the previously provided service, so it sounds like that's more or less what you guys, the situation that you guys face in the industry when you decided to go into it, right? Sure. So as far as what do you guys think has been the biggest challenges entering a market that specifically in airports that was traditionally dominated by the USDA?
Sure. I mean, I think the biggest hurdle was, you know, as starting up any company is difficult. You know, the biggest hurdle was getting our name out there and getting recognition, you know, but as we did that, you know, we were able to grow. Obviously, the best form of advertising is word of mouth. So if you make a few airports happy, obviously everybody in the aviation industry networks and talks. So the best form of advertising is word of mouth. And by having a good reputation, we were able to, you know, to go and grow. You know, again, being able to see where maybe certain needs weren't being met by the USDA and trying to offer those to airports so that we can really be a good fit and what would be best for their program.
And if I could add just a little bit to that, one of the biggest hurdles we had to overcome was credibility. we were a small company that many people hadn't heard of, and we really had to prove ourselves in order to gain that that reputation and the credibility needed to approach airports across the country.
Sure, it sounds like what you guys are referring to, the underlying theme is building a reputation and getting your work out there so that airports would be able to recognize you and offer those opportunities that they had at their own airports. So I think this kind of touches a little bit with the idea of your competitive advantages. What do you think is your organization's competitive advantages over private and public options available to airports?
Sure. I mean, obviously, we provide everything in-house. We can offer a very personalized service. We can really, being a small company, we are almost like a family, and we want to be able to treat our clients like a family. So we are able to offer that personalized service. I mean, Cody and I being the owners of the company, if a client has a question, they know where to find us. They're going to speak to us directly, and we can have a really great response time and also accountability. I mean, with dealing with the government sector, you know, if a mistake or something were to happen, it's very tough for a client to, you know, get some answers. And, you know, with a private company, we have to be accountable. Obviously, we can't make mistakes because there goes our reputation. So, again, a small company, we're able to keep our overhead a little bit low, allows us to, in most circumstances, offer better pricing compared to public options. And, again, that personalized service and expertise, I mean, all of our employees have to be trained due to the accountability reason. And so, you know, we're sending out people that are, you know, may have decades of experience, not just, you know, somebody new. And yeah, so I guess between professionalism, you know, cost effectiveness, personalized service, and accountability are probably some of the major advantages we can offer.
Yeah, if I could add one more thing to that, pride in our product. All of our staff members want to see our company be successful, and they take pride in putting out a good product. And with that behind their expertise, or backing their expertise, it just helps to make a better service to our clients, you know, all around.
Sure. Now, moving on, so as we can see, obviously, I mentioned earlier how the USDA was the initial provider of these kind of services. So the idea of outsourcing services traditionally provided by the government to the private sector can be considered a form of innovation. What role do you think innovation and, quote unquote, thinking outside the box plays in such a niche market, in your business in particular?
Competition drives innovation, and it does reduce costs as well. And the more folks you have thinking outside of the box, the more ideas that are going to be able to be, you know, find things that work efficiently to help our clients. There's many new wildlife mitigation tools out there: LRAD drones, falconry, canine. All of these were actually developed and first used by small private companies, basically just adapting to changing needs. It had been long believed that the government was the only one providing wildlife mitigation service, but in fact, until the 1980s, they played a pretty small role. You know, they were originally started as a small, federally funded coyote trapping service for ranches in the western states. Since private sector companies have come into the game, I'd like to think that they also have had to, you know, adapt to changing needs and innovate. So I think, as a general statement, the more competition you have, innovation is going to be driven, and overall, the clients are going to find, you know, a better quality that's going to fit their needs.
Now, you mentioned earlier you consider yourself a small company. So how has your business evolved and grow over the last 10 years in terms of the market share, the business scope, the staffing itself, and any other factors? How has that changed over the last decade or so?
So I think there's been some fluctuations in the industry since we started. When we first started out, it was focused primarily on consulting, and that was the biggest need. There was a very big push for wildlife hazard assessments. And those first few years, we grew really fast to meet that need. And then things fluctuated a little bit, and the need for the hazard assessments has gone down, but there's been an increased need of implementation of wildlife management plans. And that's where we've adapted to focus more on that now, and providing direct control services and trainings to airports. As far as a market share, I don't really have, you know, hard numbers on that, but it's continued to grow over the years, and our staffing requirements have adapted as well to meet those needs.
Well, I agree with that as well. You know, there was quite a big push for wildlife hazard assessments, especially after the incident on the Hudson. And, you know, once those were completed, you know, the need for implementation of wildlife hazard management plans was still there. And, you know, that's something we were able to assist with, which helps. You know, we've really had to kind of adapt to the changing need.
Sure. And a while back, I was at a training over in D.C. where I talked to one of the FAA biologists. And one of the things he pointed out was exactly that after the incident, the Hudson River, it really kind of changed the emphasis and wildlife management has been traditionally seen as a burden at some point rather than a safety concern. And after the Hudson incident, it really turned that table around and started to push a lot stronger for preventive measures. So,
absolutely, yeah. It was very, you know, it was basically an eye opener to what always was an issue. You know, like I said, the Wright brothers, I think, recorded one of the first bird strikes, you know, during one of their first flights. So it's always been an issue, but again, it was more of a nuisance, as you said. And you know, the incident on the Hudson sort of opened up everybody's eyes to what really could be a safety issue. And so now the focus was more shifted as far as, you know, what can be done proactively to prevent accidents and incidents such as what happened on Austin.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of when I was at the University of North Dakota, one of my safety professors, Professor Ulrich, mentioned that how a lot of the aviation laws and regulations were written on blood. Because of an accident, then a reactive action would happen. And it seems like that's more or less kind of like what was the case in terms of shifting the emphasis into wildlife.
If I could just add to that, too, because there was often, you know, the incident on the Hudson gets a lot of the publicity, or all the publicity for changing policy. But, you know, your quote about written in blood, there was actually about that same time prior to the Hudson incident, a corporate jet in Oklahoma was crashed and killed everyone on board when it struck a white pelican. That one didn't get much press, but in the NTSB report, it was also one of the highlighted strikes that underlined the need for the change and people's in the FAA's policy and the overall thinking of wildlife management on airports.
Sure, and I think Cody's correct in that, and also there were many others as well. You had Elmendorf, you know, there was many military incidents where lives were lost and damages were huge, and you know, in the millions. And you know, it all came down to the incident on the Hudson being right there, you know, in New York City, you know, a media center, and the media had a big play in that one as well. So I mean, it was pretty aware that it's always been an issue, but that one was eye-opening, I think, more or less just due to its size and its location.
Sure. And I think, so since we're speaking on, you know, the changes on the industry, where do you see the wildlife management industry and field going? And how do you feel your company fits into that greater picture?
I see the field, well, the emphasis is leveling out. Like I said, all of the commercial airports in the U.S. have now had a wildlife hazard assessment. Most of them have wildlife management plans. But now the key is implementation of those plans and updating of those plans. And that's how the industry's changing the most right now, as far as going from taking research and implementing it. And because it's really nice if an airport has a wildlife management plan, but what good is it if they're not implementing it? So that's the key right now, making sure that the airports are continuing to take it seriously and implementing their plans. And then as time goes on, you know, there'll need to be updates to the plan. Airports have to review their management plan at least annually. But the other key aspect of that is the training programs. Wildlife management is really simple, the concepts behind it. But the key to the training programs is reinvigorating people's interest in that management program and learning the newest skills. But I think the key is making sure that they're getting a quality training that is piques their interest and highlights the importance of what their daily job is on the airfield. An operations manager or an operations staff, their primary role on an airport is safety, whether it's a runway inspection, making sure the lights are working, or cleaning off a runway. It all revolves around making sure that environment's safe for the aircraft, and wildlife management plays an important part in that. As far as the other changes, the industry is going to come up with new technologies. A lot of people are starting to investigate the use of drones or quadcopters in wildlife mitigation programs. Radar is becoming a bigger part for some of the major airports and military bases. And then the other aspect of is SMS. In international airports, SMS plays a really big part of a wildlife management program. And in fact, our current wildlife management plans, the way they're outlined by the FAA, they already have several of those pillars of SMS built into them. So if our aviation industry continues to move in that direction, the management plans are already pretty much adapted to be implemented into an SMS program. But that is something as far as the evaluation or continued evaluation of the management program, that is one change that I see that's going to eventually occur. Some of the major airports have already implemented that, and even some of the smaller airports have done that. But it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Sure. What I'm actually hearing from your comments, Cody, is that it's a growing industry, and there's a lot of potential given the safety management system opportunities that might come into the United States once it's fully integrated, and also the technology aspect that it's a growing industry in terms of technology as well. So as those technologies become more integrated, it creates more opportunities for your business to provide those services.
Well, I guess you're 100% correct. I didn't approach that question in that manner. I was looking at the question more as if the changes in the industry and how airports were going to adapt to that. But of course, we're going we've started to test drones not on airports at other projects that we work on. We're really starting to study and actually providing the SMS training and programs for airports who request it. So, yes, we're adapting as a company to meet those new technologies and to make sure we're at the front of the line when it comes to implementing new and innovative techniques.
Sure. Now, I have two questions here, and that focuses a little bit more on more aspect of the business side of your company. And as business founders, what are the most important lessons you guys have learned?
You have to be committed. You have to, one thing I've learned is that nothing comes easy. You hopefully get out what you put in. The harder you work, hopefully the more you'll get out of it. If you just work hard, stick to your values, try to always do the right thing. Again, keep your reputation good and, do whatever it takes to do that. Hopefully you come out on top. And again, it's great being able to do something you love to do and get paid to do it. Will we be the biggest and most wealthy company out there? Probably not. But at the end of the day, we've done our best and we've stuck with things and made a lot of clients happy and a lot of airports safer and a lot of wildlife safer as well. And so you sort of just have to sometimes be able to accept things as they are and be proud of what you've accomplished and what you potentially can.
Sure. And also speaking just on evaluating the progress that you're doing within your business. So what are some of the metrics that you guys use to evaluate your company's success in serving your own clients?
I'd say the biggest thing, hands down, is our references and customer evaluations. I mean, we need feedback from them to make sure we're meeting their needs, to see how we're doing. And that way, you know, their honesty is so appreciated, because if there's an area we're not, you know, we're lacking in, or, you know, we need to know that so we can address that and get even better. Constructive criticism is great. It's always appreciated. So we really, you know, in order for us to grow, we need references, obviously. And so we want to keep our clients as happy as possible and do the best job we can for them, and so that they're willing to refer us to other clients in the future. So I'd say, you know, the number one metric is honestly feedback from our current clients.
I agree with that. And that's actually can be a challenge sometimes, as far as getting that feedback, whether it's through survey forms or direct contact with a project manager. We really do rely on that. You know, we can look at, you know, numbers, and we also do, you know, formal project evaluations to help ensure that that we're meeting the stated goals of a particular contract or project. And then the other matrix we use is, well, how successful has our program been for that airport? We put a strong emphasis on any of the management plans that we create of having key performance indicators built into that plan, so that the airport can evaluate the program. And if we're part of that program, the success of that airport's management plan and that program is going to directly affect or directly show how effective we've been at assisting them in that program. So whether it's strike rates or whatever particular KPI that airport is implementing, we use that as our matrix as well to help ensure that we're providing the best service we can.
Sure, and I think that's extremely, extremely important, just to have those indicators built in place, so that you're able to assess the progression that you're doing, and just not only with that with the program that you have in place, but also with what are the next steps that you might need to take to reach those goals. As far as now taking a big kind of a step back and looking at it from a big overarching idea, what kind of professional advice do you have for some of tomorrow's executive leaders and up-and-coming entrepreneurs, things that you want to share from your experience?
Again, you get out what you put in, hopefully. And so if you really want to achieve something, you have to do your best and try and be willing to make sacrifices, such as, you know, this in our field, wildlife management's not a 9-to-5 job by any means. So you may have to give up your nights, your weekends, your holidays even at times, you know, birthdays, etc. But ultimately, in the end, if you're successful, it'll be worth it. But again, everybody has to make that call on their own, you know, and be willing to, you know, sacrifice to get to where they want to be. And if they're not willing to make those sacrifices, then they may need to think things through before jumping in and go another route. But yeah, really, as you know, they just think things out. And, you know, if you really want to go for something, do your best and give it a best shot. What do you have to lose?
And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this interview with Cody and Kristen. I want to thank you guys for taking the time to do this interview once again. I really appreciate your feedback, and I'm sure everybody will enjoy hearing what you have to say.
Great. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Best of luck.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.